And if we're going to talk about Amitabha, then it's very important that we have the same motivation as Amitabha Buddha has. And so, like any Buddha, Amitabha cherishes all living beings more than he cherishes himself. And he works diligently and unfailingly to benefit them. And he has the wisdom that knows the ultimate nature and the conventional nature. So he knows how to best benefit living beings. So let us cultivate the motivation to become a fully awakened Buddha like Amitabha, so that we can benefit living beings in the same way that he does. So make your motivation one of affection and compassion for living beings, together with a commitment to serve them and to lead them on the path to awakening. Okay. So it's funny, I look out here and here, and you're all looking at the screen. And it's like, hey, I'm here. And you're going, yeah, we know, we're looking at you. Okay. So, the Amitabha practice is one found in the general Mahayana tradition, and also in the branch of the Mahayana, which is the Tantrayana or Vajrayana tradition. Yeah, so we find the practice of Amitabha in Chinese Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, Vietnamese, Korean, Japanese Buddhism. It's quite a popular practice. But I've noticed that many people don't understand this practice well, yeah? And I think that's because in ancient times, if we think of in ancient China, not so many people were literate. The general population was illiterate, they were farmers, and they needed some spiritual practice, something to give them hope, but they weren't about to sit down and study the great Indian treatises because they didn't know how to read. So I think the master simplified the Amitabha practice to make it suitable for those people. And while people, the Sangha members, would learn the full practice and the philosophy behind it, for the general public, they didn't know that very much. And so they basically just chanted Amitabha's name without really understanding why or the meaning or, you know, I want to go to the Pure Land, but why? What's so good about the Pure Land? You know, they didn't understand all of this. So I think that now is really the time to educate people much more about what the Amitabha practice is, because it's a very rich practice and there's a lot of different elements that we find in it. And for those of you who have studied in the Tibetan tradition, the stages of the path or the Lamrim texts, you know, then so many of these general Buddhist teachings are found in the Amitabha practice. You know, for example, we start out When we do the practice, we take refuge in the three jewels, we generate bodhicitta, we meditate on the four immeasurables, we do practices to purify our negative karma and to create merit. Yeah. Then we meditate on Amitabha and try and develop concentration. And having developed concentration, then we really investigate who is Amitabha and by association, who am I? So that leads to an understanding of emptiness, the ultimate nature. And then, of course, when we chant Namo Amitofo, we're also thinking of the enlightened activities of Amitabha and all the other Buddhas, and so aspiring to develop those same enlightened activities and benefit sentient beings in the same way. So you see, just within the meditation on Amitabha, there's a whole lot of other topics that come in, you know, and we have to do the practice based on keeping ethical discipline, okay? So there's a lot to learn about the general Buddhist philosophy so that we can incorporate that into our practice of Amitabha, okay? So, okay. So when we talk about birth in Amitabha's Pure Land, yeah, we have to understand why we are aiming for that kind of birth. Yeah. And that seems, sometimes when we think about the Amitabha practice, it seems like our whole goal is to be born in the Pure Land. Yeah. But if you really think about it, because we have to understand all these other Dharma teachings and Dharma points, the whole purpose is not just to be born in the Pure Land, but to really immerse ourselves in all of the Dharma teachings so that we can become fully awakened. Okay? The thing is, why we want to be in a Pure Land is because it makes the practice much easier than, you know, in our present world. So the Pure Land can be understood on two levels, the transcendental level and also the ordinary level. And this depends on the faculties and abilities of the disciple. So for ordinary people who practice the Amitabha practice in an ordinary way, then they see the Pure Land as some external place that they're going to go to. They don't understand that Sukhavati, the land of great bliss, or Amitabha's Pure Land, is actually something created by our mind. It's not an external place. Yeah, there's no MRT that's going to take you there, okay? Yeah, and you don't have to purchase a ticket before you go. Because in fact, if we understand the Pure Land correctly, on the transcendental level, we realize it's something created by our mind in the same way that our world right now is created by our mind or exists in relationship to our mind. Okay. But at the beginning, ordinary people say, okay, Amitabha's Pure Land is out there and I want to make it so that when I die, Amitabha comes, and since there's no MRT station, he has a special taxi service and he's going to pick me up and take me to the Pure Land. It's not exactly like that, okay? When we talk about Amitabha coming or appearing at the time of death, it's not some external being. You know, it's not that you text and, you know, Amitabha, I'm dying, come quickly. And then Amitabha goes, oh, okay, there's another sentient being. I better get on the ball and get down there. It's not like that, okay? Because Amitabha is the purified nature of our mind. Yeah, he's not really an external being. And the Pure Land isn't some place out there. It's something created by the pure nature of our mind. So it isn't that Amitabha comes at the time of death and gets us. It's rather that at the time of death, we meditate on the Dharma. And by imbuing our mind and heart with the Buddha's teachings and transforming our mind, then we are reborn in Amitabha's Pure Land. But our body, this body, does not go to Amitabha's Pure Land. Okay? I mean, do you want to have this body forever? Yeah? This body that gets old and sick and dies? Yeah. We don't really want to have this kind of body. The advantage of being born in Amitabha's Pure Land is we leave this kind of body behind, and through the purity of our mind, then we take a pure body. Okay? And that kind of body doesn't get old and sick and dies. And it doesn't get stomach aches. Yeah? So you can never, if you're born in Amitabha's Pure Land, and Amitabha's teaching, you must be there. You cannot say, oh, I can't go la, I have a tummy ache tonight. Okay? Because nobody has stomach aches in the Pure Land. Yeah. And you can't say if you're born there, oh, I work so hard all day, I'm so tired, I'm going to go to bed early. Amitabha, I'll come to your teachings tomorrow night. Yeah, you can't do that because nobody works at a job all day and nobody gets exhausted. Okay? So the whole idea of having a Pure Land is that your environment encourages you to practice the Dharma. If we're very smart, in this life, we can train our mind so that our environment is always teaching us the Dharma. Okay? But we have to be very clever and very smart to do that. In Amitabha's Pure Land, by the force of his vow to create the Pure Land, yeah, they say that when the wind blows through the trees, the sound of the leaves rustling is a teaching on impermanence. Okay? So that would be nice, wouldn't it? You're walking down a street in the Pure Land and you have the wind blow and it's a teaching on impermanence. And you're not worrying about if your hair's getting messed up. Okay? So everything becomes something that encourages you to practice. But I've always wondered, because it seems to me in Amitabha's Pure Land, everybody's going to get along very well. You know, people, the beings born there have not eliminated their anger and their attachment and jealousy and so on. But the environment doesn't encourage those negative and disturbing emotions to arise. So it seems to me everybody would get along quite well. But then I wonder, if everybody gets along quite well, how do you practice fortitude? Yeah, because one of the six paramitas that we have to perfect to become a Buddha is fortitude. How do you practice that if everybody gets along? And if everybody has whatever they need in Amitabha's Pure Land, how do you practice generosity? And generosity is another one of the perfections that we have to bring to completion to become a Buddha. Yeah. So I have these kind of questions. I haven't had a chance to ask them to my teacher, but, you know, I wonder. They say that the people with very little merit, when they're born in Amitabha's Pure Land, there's seven grades of lotuses, and so the people with little merit get born in a lower lotus, and it takes longer for that lotus to open. So I don't know, maybe the beings born there get frustrated. They feel like they're stuck in an elevator and like, let me out of this lotus, quick. And Amitabha says, you got to create more merit first. Okay, so I'm joking, but, you know, there's some meaning here. Okay, so Sukhavati, Amitabha's Pure Land, came about due to Amitabha's compassion and his unshakable resolves, or vows, his strong determination to set that up. So they say that, you know, if you talk about Amitabha as a person, that many eons ago he was a bodhisattva monk named Dhammakara, and he was contemplating all the ways that he could benefit sentient beings when he became a Buddha. And he knew that many Pure Lands already existed, but only sentient beings who had abandoned non-virtue could be born there. And he was very concerned about what about ordinary sentient beings who still had afflictions and had little merit, what was going to happen to them. And so he said, he made an unshakable resolve to establish a Pure Land where ordinary living beings could be born. And so he generated bodhicitta, the aspiration for full awakening, in the presence of Buddha Lokeshwararaja, who then taught him the bodhisattva practices for millions of years. And then at the end, he established his Pure Land. Okay? So although Sukhavati is considered to still be within cyclic existence, you're not out of cyclic existence yet. Still, if you're born there, then you will no longer take rebirth in cyclic existence. You will no longer fall to a lower realm. Yeah. If you become a bodhisattva while you're in Sukhavati, then you can emanate many bodies and appear in the human realm and in the lower realms as well in order to benefit the sentient beings there. But that is done by choice out of compassion. You're not thrown in those kind of rebirths due to afflictions and karma. Okay. So I'll read you a little bit. You know, when I said that Amitabha is the nature of our mind and the Pure Land comes out of the nature, the pure nature of our mind, I'll read you one quotation by a Chinese master named Chu Hung, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing his name, please excuse me. But he says, mind is basically unborn, meaning it's empty of inherent existence. There's no findable essence that we can locate in the mind. But the mind is born when causal conditions come together. mind basically does not die. Our mind never goes out of existence. Okay. But on a conventional level, it dies when the causes of our life cease, and then the body and mind separate. Okay. So there, he says there seems to be birth and death, but fundamentally there is no going or coming. Okay. Meaning that there's no inherently existent going and coming, no inherently existent birth and death. Okay. If you can understand this, you will be at peace through birth and death, ever still, ever aware. Okay? So what he's getting at is understanding the ultimate nature, how things actually exist, is the key to understanding who Amitabha is and what the Pure Land is. Okay. Meanwhile, us ordinary beings, yeah, we have lots of grasping. We have lots of wrong conceptions. We think things have some inherent nature. And so because of that, we create polluted karma and we get reborn under the influence of afflictions and karma. And that's why we have so much dukkha, so many unsatisfactory conditions in our life, because the fundamental cause that motivated our life is ignorance. And ignorance, you can tell by the name, isn't something auspicious that's going to benefit us. Yeah. When we can appear due to wisdom, due to compassion, then we have control over our existence, and we can deliberately, consciously create bodies that go out and be of great benefit to other living beings. And so that's what we really want to do. So, yeah, generating that bodhicitta intention is something very important to be born in Amitabha's Pure Land and to become a Buddha like Amitabha. So bodhicitta is that intention to become a fully awakened Buddha so that we can be of the most effective benefit to sentient beings. Yeah, some of you were at the talk of Vasubandhu about bodhicitta. Okay, so if we want to generate bodhicitta, we have to think like according to those 10 vows that Vasubandhu stated. Okay. Now, of course, to have bodhicitta, then we have to see other living beings as lovable and have love and compassion for them. Yeah, and we have to be aware of their suffering and their misery and care about it. Yeah. So that means we have to open our eyes to the situation of other living beings. We can't just go through our lives kind of, you know, like this. I want what I want when I want it. Give me this. Get that away. I want this. I don't want that. I like this person. I don't like that person. Okay. A mind that looks at life in that way is not going to get reborn in Amitabha's Pure Land, because that kind of mind is completely self-centered. Yeah. I like this. I don't like that. Yeah. I deserve what's better. Don't ask me to help. I've already helped enough. Yeah, I'm jealous of this colleague. I hate that colleague. I'm fighting with this relative. I'm attached to my friends. I hate my enemies. And I don't care about everybody else. Okay? So that a mind that thinks in that way which is very similar to the way our present mind thinks, don't you think? Yeah? Is your mind like that? Yeah? Who do you think about first thing in the morning? Yeah? Do you wake up in the morning and think, are other sentient beings suffering? Or do you wake up in the morning and think, I want happiness. I want everything nice to happen to me today. Okay? So our limited self-centered mind, there's no way that mind is going to get us to the Pure Land. Yeah, we're completely unqualified, actually. Now, I know that there, in the Amitabha Sutra, it says, oh, if you just say Amitabha's Buddha's name 10 times, then when you die, Amitabha will come down in his chariot, pick you up, and take you back to the Pure Land. But I don't think that passage should be taken literally. Okay. I don't think that we're going to get born in the Pure Land by going, Amitabha, 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 Amitabha. Okay, I did my 10. I'm not doing any more. Yeah? Do you think what I just did is going to get you born in a Pure Land so that you can hear teachings directly from Amitabha? Yeah? No, of course not. Okay? Otherwise, all those little, you know, your little wooden fish that you push the button that chant Amitabha, you know, then they'd all go to the Pure Land. They say Amitabha more than we do. Except they don't have mind, so they can't go to the Pure Land. Okay. So it's not just saying the name. The actual term, okay, in Chinese, and again, excuse my Chinese, is nianfo, okay? So nian literally means mindfulness or recollection. So it means recollection of the Buddha. In this case, recollection of Amitabha Buddha. After many centuries, Nianfo came to refer to the verbal recitation of Amitabha's name. But initially, the meaning of it was mental recollection, mental mindfulness of Amitabha. Not just our mouth moving, but our mind meditating on Amitabha. So what does it mean for the mind to meditate on Amitabha? Okay. It really has quite a vast meaning. So one aspect is thinking about Amitabha Buddha's qualities. Yeah. And so to know the qualities of Amitabha Buddha, we have to study the scriptures. Because the scriptures talk about the 10 powers of a Buddha, the 4 fearlessnesses of the Buddha, the 18 unshared qualities of a Buddha, the 27 kinds of enlightened influence of a Buddha, the 60 qualities of a Buddha's speech. Okay? So if we're going to meditate on an Amitabha, and think about his qualities so that we get inspired to generate those qualities ourselves, then to learn what those qualities are, we have to read the scriptures, we have to hear teachings, we have to think about those teachings, and then recollect them in our meditation. Okay? So that's one aspect of meditating on Amitabha. Another aspect is to develop concentration on the figure of Amitabha or on the sound of his name. Okay. So instead of using the breath to develop shamatha or serenity, we imagine the figure of Amitabha in the space in front of us with his body made of golden light. He's golden in Chinese Buddhism. He's red in Tibetan Buddhism. Don't ask me why he changed colors. Maybe he got sunburn or, you know, I'm not sure. But he's different colors. I don't think it really matters, okay? But whichever form of Amitabha we choose, we imagine it in the space in front of us, you know, and there's Amitabha made of light. And that is the object on which we develop concentration. And so to develop concentration, then we go over the details of Amitabha's body and then fix our mind as focused as we can on that general image. When the image fades, again we go through the details of his body. Again we fix our attention there. So we follow all the instructions on how to generate concentration. So how do we learn the instructions for generating concentration? We have to study them, hear the teachings from our teacher, study the scriptures. Okay. And then when Amitabha, you develop single-pointed concentration on Amitabha, then it's, you know, whenever you sit down to meditate, Amitabha's right there. And you automatically feel a strong Dharma connection with him. And it becomes easy to contemplate his qualities. Okay. And so, you know, if your meditation object for concentration is Amitabha, yeah, you're constantly thinking about the Buddha and remembering the Buddha. Yeah. What are your current concentration objects in your daily life? What do you focus on more? Yeah. What do you visualize a lot? Yeah. Maybe your boyfriend or girlfriend. Maybe your paycheck. Yeah. Maybe your credit card. Maybe the food that you really like. Yeah. What does our mind focus on in our ordinary life? Do we think about the Buddha today? Before you came here, did you think about the Buddha at all? Yeah, what did you think about all day long? Oh, I have to go to work and my boss wants me to do this and my colleagues don't cooperate. And anyway, I don't like my job and I want to quit, but I can't quit because I need more money. And when's my paycheck coming? And, you know, what am I going to do with my paycheck? Okay, I have to pay the rent. I have to buy some food. But then I'm going to go out and have some fun and splurge with money. But I hope my family doesn't see that because I know that the kids need more money. But I really want to go out and have some fun by myself. Well, not by myself. I want to go out with my friends. Now, where can we go? Oh, we can go, where is it? Batang, is that where you go to gamble? Yeah? Oh, I can go to Batang and gamble. I can go to KL and get some special food. I can go to, you know, wherever you want to go. Yeah. Then your mind is, it's all over the world thinking about how you're going to spend your paycheck. That's what you think about all day when you're not thinking about work and how much you don't like it. Okay. So imagine all day long, instead of having all those kind of thoughts, here was a Buddha in front of you all the time, looking at you with kindness and compassion and delight and wanting to lead you to full awakening. Yeah. Wouldn't your day change a lot if you thought about the Buddha instead of thinking about what you usually think about all day long? Okay. So when we talk about Nyen Pho, recollection of the Buddha, it means really, you know, thinking about the Buddha. Because if we think about the Buddha and the Buddha's qualities, our mind is very happy. When we think about the people we don't like and their qualities, our mind gets very unhappy. Okay? So if we really want to recollect Amitabha, we have to stop focusing so much on all the people we don't like and the people we're mad at and the people we're jealous of, and instead direct our mind towards something positive that will inspire us. Yeah? Are you getting what I'm saying? Yeah? Because what we think about all day, you know, it's what occupies our mind and creates our moods. Yeah. So if you get angry right before you go to bed, then often you don't sleep very well and your sleep is disturbed. And when you wake up and you're still angry. Yeah. Because that was our object of concentration right before we went to bed. You know, this idiot, what he did. Then what good does that do you? You go to sleep angry. You don't sleep well. You wake up angry. Yeah. Our mind is very far away from the Buddha when we're like that. Okay. So you can see that having recollection of Amitabha Buddha necessitates that we really change what we think about all day. Okay? And focus on a pure object like Amitabha. And when you think of Amitabha looking at you with kindness and compassion, you get a whole different feeling than when you imagine your boyfriend or girlfriend looking at you. Okay? Think about it. Okay, so the different scriptures and different sages have kind of outlined the kinds of qualities that we need to cultivate to be born in Sukhavati. And like I said, the benefit of being born there is that it becomes very easy to practice the Dharma. Okay, you don't have to pay taxes. Yeah, there's no taxes on your lotus. Okay. Yeah. You don't have to, fill out forms to please a bureaucracy. You don't need to punch a time clock for when you go to work. Okay. You have all day long the leisure to practice the Dharma. And you get to hear the teachings directly from Amitabha, who teaches impeccably pure Dharma. Okay? And he teaches it in a way so that we can easily understand. And so everybody, when a Buddha teaches the Dharma, everybody hears what they need to hear at that particular time. Yeah. So it's kind of like having, you know, Dharma specifically made for your mind at that moment. And then, of course, if you go away and meditate on it, you'll get a deep understanding of it. Okay. So that's why we want to be born there. So one of the Amitabha Sutras, explains that to generate the vow to be reborn in Sukhavati, then you need three qualities. So the first one is the utmost sincere mind, which is a mind of genuine sincerity and firm commitment to be reborn in the land of great bliss. Okay? So that means you have to really understand the benefits of being born there and have a strong aspiration. Yeah. Right now, what do you have the strongest aspiration for? Yeah. What do you aspire for most of your day? Is it to be born in the Pure Land? Yeah, maybe some people. Or is it to have sense, pleasure, happiness? Yeah, what do we aspire for? What do we want most of the time? What do we direct our energy at getting most of the time? It's usually things we like, isn't it? Yeah? Isn't our life now very much predicated on, I like this and I've got to get it, and I don't like that and I've got to get away from it? And so most of our life today, we're looking just at our immediate happiness. What the Amitabha practice is telling us to do is we have to look beyond the happiness of only this life. Because the happiness of only this life comes and goes very quickly. Yeah? You ate lunch today. Do you still have the happiness of eating lunch? That happiness is gone, isn't it? Yeah? You had the happiness of getting your paycheck last month. Do you still have that happiness? No. Yeah. You have the happiness of having a wonderful time with your family on one evening. Do you still have that? No. Okay. So the happiness of this life is, you know, put it this way. The happiness of Buddhahood is grade triple A plus happiness. Yeah, the highest happiness we can have. The happiness of this life is grade D. D as in dum-dum. Okay. In other words, compared to the happiness of Buddhahood, just running after the happiness of this life is really kind of a waste of time. And yet, because our mind's obscured with ignorance, we run after the happiness of this life. Okay? And we forget about the happiness of Buddhahood, so we don't have that for that factor, which is the sincere mind that wants to get born in Sukhavati. Okay? So we have to generate that kind of sincere aspiration. Okay? So it's like, I'm done looking for sense, pleasure, happiness. I'm done trying to have a good reputation. I'm done trying to be richer than other people. You know, right now, I really want the happiness that comes from spiritual practice, the happiness that comes from being a Buddha. And so we aspire for Buddhahood. We generate bodhicitta. Okay? So that's the first factor that we need to generate that the vow to be reborn in Sukhavati. The second is the deep believing thought, which is firm conviction, that it is without doubt, that is without doubt in the Buddha's teachings on the Pure Land. In other words, we've studied the Pure Land teachings. They really make sense to us. We don't have doubts and confusion about them. We have clarity. And then the third factor is the desire to be born in Sukhavati, such that we dedicate all of our merit from now on to being born there. Okay? So we don't dedicate our merit to win the lottery. We don't dedicate our merit to marry some very good-looking person, or to have our child marry some good-looking person, or better yet, a rich person. Okay? That's not what we're interested in. We dedicate our merit for the well-being of all sentient beings, and so that we can attain spiritual realizations and be able to work most effectively for the benefit of all living beings. Okay? So it's with those three, yeah, the sincere, firm commitment to be born in the Pure Land, number one. Second is conviction without doubt in the teachings on the Pure Land. And third is dedicating our merit for that. Okay? And then with those three factors, then we generate the unshakable resolve to take rebirth there. Okay? And with that, then we do the Amitabha practice. Okay? So we visualize Amitabha, we reflect on Amitabha's qualities, we try and generate those same qualities ourselves. So we try and generate renunciation of samsara, bodhicitta, the wisdom realizing emptiness. Yeah. We try and make ourselves into Amitabha by copying his qualities. You know, and in that way, it creates the cause to be born there. Okay. So then there's another scripture that talks about three qualities that are required. First one is faith. Second is commitment, and third is practice. Okay, so faith, yeah, as a quality that we need to cultivate to be reborn in Sukhavati, means having confidence in ourself and in others. Yeah, thinking, I can become a Buddha. Yeah, I'm not some worthless piece of, you know, shameful whatever. But I have the Buddha nature. I have the potential to become fully awakened, and I can do it. It also means having faith in cause and effect, in the law of karma and the results of karma. Okay? If we have faith and confidence in the law of karma, then we keep really impeccable ethical conduct. Yeah, we don't cut corners. We don't justify or rationalize our bad behavior. But we really try and act in a suitable way, keeping our precepts purely. Yeah, being kind to other living beings. Okay? And then the third thing we need to have faith in is in the inner truth. In other words, in the emptiness of inherent existence. Okay, so faith doesn't mean we just believe it. It means we have some knowledge about these things, and our faith is based on knowledge. Okay, it doesn't mean blind faith. Yeah, because, you know, we know that the Buddha told us not to cultivate blind faith. It doesn't get us anywhere. Okay. So, faith in ourself, faith in karma and its effects, faith in emptiness. Then the second element we need is commitment. And the commitment arises from renouncing the mundane world and making a strong determination to be born in the land of great bliss. Okay? So what renouncing the mundane world means is we're renouncing defilement and we're seeking purity. Okay? We're renouncing suffering. We're renouncing unsatisfactory circumstances. We're directing our mind towards the greater good. We're directing our mind towards purity. Okay? Purity in our behavior, in our speech, in our thought, in our motivation. Okay? So we can do this. Again, it requires practice. All these things require study and practice. Yeah. So I'm just sketching out some of the things that we need to develop. But then, you know, you need to do some Dharma study and attend teachings so that you learn exactly how to develop all these things. Because I can't include all of those in one evening's talk. Okay? Okay. And then the third, so we had faith is one quality, commitment is a second, and then practice. Okay? So practice means continually being mindful of Amitabha. Okay? So whether we recite Amitabha's name, or we visualize Amitabha, or we contemplate his qualities, okay? It means that as much as possible, we keep our mind on that, okay? And we use the word practice because practice implies repetition. We need to do something again and again. We don't just hear, have one teaching on Amitabha and then sit down and have perfect meditation. Yeah, it takes practice and we need to put in effort, but we have the ability to do that. And we have the causes and conditions to do that. So let's use our opportunity to create these kinds of qualities. Okay, so I talked in terms of practice. I talked about focusing on meditating on Amitabha's qualities. I talked about using Amitabha as the object of our concentration by visualizing him. Then another way to do the practice with Amitabha is by chanting. Okay? And so I think probably most of you are familiar with the serpentine chanting, where we go, you know, in a line and we go back and forth and we're chanting Namo Amitofo. And when you, so that becomes like walking meditation. Yeah, you do the walking meditation like that for a while. Your body relaxes. Then you sit down. And instead of just chanting Namo Amitofo slowly, you start just saying Amitofo, Amitofo, Amitofo as fast as you can. Okay? Amitofo, 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 Amitofo. As fast as you can. If you do it as fast as you can, there is no space in your mind for any kind of defiled thought. Because you have to concentrate so much to say Namo Amitofo quickly that you can't think of anything else. You can't think of the person you don't like. You can't think of the food you want to eat. All you can think about is, how do I get the words Amitofo, Amitofo out of my mouth fast enough? And especially if you're chanting with a group and you have to keep up with the group who's chanting very quickly. Amitofo, 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 Amitofo. They're going faster than me. Amitofo, 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 Amitofo. You know? And you so when you do that, the kind of concentration you develop, Your whole mind has to focus on Amitabha. And so you do that for a while, and then the bell rings, and the chanting suddenly stops, and you sit in perfect silence. And after you've said Amitabha so quickly for a long time, when you stop, it's like the mind stops. The thinking, the conceptuality, the blah, blah in our mind just stops. And then with that very quiet mind, you can meditate on emptiness. Okay? So you sometimes what I do at that point is, because the mind's quiet, and I watch the mind, and where does a thought come from? Before you think a thought, where is that thought? While you're thinking that thought, where is the thought? And after the thought ceases, where did it go? So you don't contemplate this in words, yeah, but you just sit there and you investigate, you observe. Yeah, and because your mind is very quiet at that point, it becomes quite interesting. Okay. Another thing you can investigate at that point is who was chanting Amitabha. Your mind got very quiet. You're no longer chanting. Who was chanting Amitabha? And the obvious answer is, I was chanting Amitabha. Well, who or what is I? When I say the word I, what does the word I refer to? So you meditate on that. Or you think, I was saying Namo Amitabha. Who is Amitabha? And our mind says, oh, that red or golden guy. Really? Is that really Amitabha? You have to sit there. Exactly who or what is Amitabha? Is Amitabha his body? Is Amitabha his mind? Who or what is Amitabha? Okay? So you can also meditate like that. So that leads you to deeper exploration into the nature of reality, the nature of the self. Yeah. I'm meditating on Amitabha. Who is meditating on Amitabha? What does meditating on Amitabha mean? Now, what does it mean? What does meditation on Amitabha mean? Can you find the meditation on Amitabha? And who or what is Amitabha? Okay, so this leads into really investigating how do things exist. And so if you've studied emptiness and dependent arising beforehand, then that will help you with this kind of investigation. Mm-hmm. So again, we come back to hearing teachings, learning the scriptures. Okay? Okay, so someone says, I learned from Chinese Mahayana teachings that if one's aspiration is very keen, one can reach the Pure Land any moment instead of upon death with sincere chanting. Of course, one needs faith and practice too. What is your comment? I think if you've created all of the conditions to attain the Pure Land, whenever that time comes where all the conditions are together, then you can attain the Pure Land. Okay. Then the question comes, you know, what are all the causes and conditions? Yeah. And how do I create them? And so that's why we need to study and practice. Okay. When we concentrate on chanting Amitofo, is this a form of meditation? So like I said, you know, what I just said is when you chant it really quickly and get your mind very focused and then stop, yeah, then your chanting is a form of meditation. And after you stop it, you can very easily go into meditation. Okay. Oh, more questions. Okay. Okay. In our daily practice, how do we choose which to chant? Amitofo, Om Mani Padme Hum, Namo Kwan Shien Pusa. It doesn't matter, but you have to do more than chant. Okay. You have to do more than chant in your daily practice. Because like I said before, that tape recorder can chant. Your phone can chant. Yeah. I'm sure somebody must have made an Amitabha app by now. You know? And you can press your Amitabha app and the app goes, Namo Amitofo. And meanwhile, you can take a nap. Okay, so it's not just about chanting. It's about reflection. It's about contemplation. What is Amitabha? What are the Buddha's qualities? How can I change my daily behavior to become more like a Buddha? Okay. So we have to think about these things. It can't just be, you know, what am I chanting? Namo Kwan Shien Pusa or Namo Amitofo? I can't remember. Okay? Not like that. Okay. Okay, it is sometimes more difficult to extend our great compassion to our direct family than to complete strangers. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes this is really true because who do you get more angry at? Strangers or your family? Your family. Who do you say the most cruel, mean, awful things to? Strangers or your family? Family, isn't it? We would never say to a stranger what we say to our family. And yet they're the people that we say we love the most. Isn't that kind of crazy? Yeah? Okay. So this person is saying, how can we practice patience with our family? Good question. Yeah. So
I recommend studying Shantideva's text, Engaging in the Bodhisattva's Deeds, Chapter 6, or His Holiness Dalai Lama's book, Healing Anger, or my book, Working with Anger. They may have it downstairs, I'm not sure. Okay? And really going through that, learning all the different antidotes to anger, and then practicing them. And first you practice them when you're not angry. Okay? Because the antidotes to anger mean that we have to see the situation from a different viewpoint. And it's much easier to do that when we're not angry than when we are angry. So we have to really familiarize our mind with a new way of looking at things. Okay, on a more practical level, to respond to this person, one thing that I think would be very helpful is before you go in your home, okay, when you come back from work, before you go in your home, you stop before you open the door and you think, I'm going into my home and I'm going to see the people that I care about the most. And I'm going to be kind to them. Of course, sometimes these people may say and do things that push my buttons. But my buttons are my responsibility. So I'm not going to blame them if they say things that I don't like that are my sensitive points. Because I have to get rid of my sensitive points. And I'm going to try as much as possible to be kind to them. And I think especially with your kids, yeah, make a strong determination to connect with your children and to ask your spouses also, you know, or your parents. And here's a nice kind of question to ask every day. Especially to your kids. What did you learn today? Yeah? What did you learn today? And I bet you could have some really interesting discussions with your kids and your siblings or your parents or your spouse, because we're learning something every day. Yeah? And so for us to try and vocalize, put in words what we've learned, and then to listen to other people about what they've learned, then we could have some very good discussions. Yeah? Or say to your kids, tell me about your friends. Or what qualities do you like in friends? Yeah, this is a good thing to discuss with kids. What kind of qualities make somebody a good friend? And how can we develop those qualities so we can be a good friend to other people? Okay. So my point is, engage in some kind of meaningful discussion with your family. Don't just walk in the door, throw your briefcase down, sit down and go, I am so exhausted. Yeah. Oh, kid, why are you, my kids making so much noise? Why don't they shut up? Yeah. And then to get your kids to shut up, you go, did you do your homework? Yeah. You didn't do your homework. Sit down and do it now. You can't go out and play. You have to do your homework. You have to go to tuition. Yeah, you have to get straight A's and be the most perfect one in your class. Oh my goodness, your poor kids. Yeah, so much pressure on them. Yeah. Singapore has some beautiful parks. How often do you see children playing in parks? Yeah. I travel all over the world. I see children playing in parks, except in Singapore. Yeah. Because your kids are all there doing tuition, doing their homework, trying to figure something out. Your kids never go outside and play. And they say that during play, that's when kids can be really creative. Or if your kids play, they always go somewhere to learn how to play by step A, step B, step C. Yeah? What about letting kids get together and just create something from their own creativity? Yeah? What about letting them do art projects? Oh, art doesn't make enough money. Yeah? Who cares? Do you want a rich kid or do you want a happy kid? Okay, you want a rich kid. If you want a rich kid, how about taking the pressure off your kid? And if you want the money so bad, you work for it. And let your kids be creative. Let them be kids. Yeah? Let them play and dance and sing and paint and do all sorts of exciting things. Yeah? Okay. Okay. Okay, this one's going to be the last question because we're out of time. Mm-hmm. How do we investigate our thoughts without words? Is that a form of non-conceptual thinking? How do we develop this capacity? Okay, so thinking is always conceptual. But here we're trying, there's different ways to think. There's thinking where you have a lot of words going on in your mind and a lot of noise going on in your mind. And there's thinking that is just like observation. Yeah? Almost no conceptual at all. You know? Trying to just be aware without a lot of chatter in your mind. Just be aware. So a thought comes in your mind and you instantly, where did that thought come from? And you can't intellectualize about that. Yeah. You can't say, oh, that thought came from, you know, page 27 in, you know, the book in my mind. And no, it didn't come there. Yeah. You have to just watch. Where did that thought come from? See if you can find where it came from. Maybe it didn't come from a place. Yeah. Anyway, what in the world is that thought? So again, you're not intellectually going, a thought is energy that passes through the mind based on concept in which you have the appearance of you have a conceptual appearance as the appearing object to the mental consciousness. No, you don't do that. You just watch. What is a thought? Can you catch a thought? Yeah? Okay? So, anyway, enjoy the Amitabha practice. Learn more about it. Okay? Try and put what we've talked about tonight into practice. you know, in terms of thinking about Amitabha's qualities, visualizing Amitabha, yeah, keeping your mind on the chanting, and then the silent meditation that follows that. Okay?